Hello and welcome back to Module 8, Monetization and Marketing. Now it's time to learn how to actually make some money with those apps. I'm Tobias Marks again, and with me today is Jason Fox. If you didn't catch yesterday, I am a game evangelist at Microsoft. I've been working here for about a year now. Before that, I ran my own indie companies for 4+ years, making mobile games on all platforms.
Yeah, and once again, I'm Jason Fox. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I focus on gaming, cloud, and client. I've got 13 years of industry experience doing games, data visualization, graphics, DirectX, and you can find me on Twitter, Jason G. Fox, or follow me on my blog, jasongfox.com.
Very cool. So now we actually want to know how you're going to make some money with games. It was coming up yesterday a lot in the chat. People say, how do I make money with this?
Yeah.
So let's go over what we're going to talk about. We're going to say, okay, what is an indie exactly, and how are those indies making money? We're going to go over App Store optimization, which is, if you don't know that term, you will know it by the end of this talk. That's my main goal, so we're going to cover that a lot. And we're going to talk about apps as a service industry and exactly what that means. So first off, how are indies doing it? What exactly is an indie anyway? People were asking about that in the chat before. Indie is independent developer. That means that you don't have any publisher behind you. You really don't have any safety net. You make a game, and if it fails, it was your money. You know, if you're a big AAA studio, you have some funding, you have some investors. If the game's not popular, you might not get hired for a second time, but you're still getting your original paycheck. Indies are kind of out there by themselves. That's a broad term. It could mean a hobbyist, someone who's working, you know, one or two man devs in their home. It could mean a small team, 20 people, self-funding, and everywhere in between. But that's okay, because these indies, they're able to do it. They're competing with big apps on the store today. This isn't just, you know, small side projects people are doing in their own time, you know, getting a couple little, you know, extra pocket change. These are number one apps are indie made.
The way I define it is just somebody who is not contracted with a publisher to build a game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Publishers, and that's a huge scope of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. So these self-published games, these small studios, sometimes as small as one person or, you know, even just two people, are reaching the number one slots in stores. They're making serious money. And they're competing with the big guys. They're competing with the AAA studios. They're not just competing relatively well. They're doing better than these guys that have sometimes million-dollar budgets behind their game. So is it just luck?
What are some of these games? Can we...
Oh, I mean, like, 3 is probably one I've been playing a lot lately. That's been super popular.
Angry Birds was an indie game.
Absolutely.
Right?
Minecraft is probably one of the biggest notable successes of all time, practically.
Yeah. Flappy Bird.
Yes, definitely.
For what that's worth. Yep.
You know, this isn't just, as I said, not, you know, one or two apps every now and then. It's very common to see indie apps top the charts. So those apps succeed. Not because, well, a bunch of apps release and somebody rolls the dice and they are lucky enough to be selected. There's a science behind which apps make it to the top of the stores, which apps make money, and which apps don't. Too many developers I see talk about, well, it's just luck. I made a game, this guy made a game, that guy's successful, I wasn't. It must have just been luck, right? Well, there's a reason why they stand out, and you can't just clone to succeed. Too many people say, well, Flappy Bird was successful, well, Angry Birds is successful, I'll just make a game like that, release it. Why wasn't mine successful? Well, that's already been done. It's already been seen. It's already been shown. You have to stand out. You have to be unique. If you search the store right now, you're going to find so many different Flappy Bird clones, or what's that helicopter game he just came out with? He came back after. It's already been cloned
a
dozen times at this point.
I think they cloned it before he even published it.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're talking about here is not about, okay, we're going to do marketing, here's where you have to spend money, here's where you buy ads to market. There's all these traditional marketing ways that just involve dollar spends. We're not saying, here's how to spend money on your app. We're talking about marketing with zero budget. We're talking about marketing with nothing and having similar levels of success to games that have those big advertising budgets. So how do you do that? Number one way, App Store optimization. Have you heard about this, Jason?
I have. Several of your talks, actually.
Most developers I talk to, when they're first getting into the industry, they don't really pay attention to this. So App Store optimization means your presence in the App Store. Now, whatever I say App Store, I mean any App Store. This could be the Windows Store, it could be the Windows Phone Store, it could be the Xbox page, whatever gateway they have to get to your app. In a digital distribution age, no matter where they find out about your app, if they get recommended from a friend, if you're the number one in the charts, they just find you through search, they're always going to be funneled through this page. And that page will have your icon, your screenshots, and your description.
Now, do I need to optimize the same way for every store? Do the same general principles apply?
The same general principles apply. There might be some keywords that work better in one store versus another.
Okay.
But really, once you start thinking about this stuff, you're going to have a leg up on your competition in a big way. There's so many games out there that these developers will spend sometimes years of their lives working on it, perfecting it, making it better. And then when it comes to release, they have the intern write up a description in a day. They look at it, okay, that seems fine. Or, for example, the icon. They'll take an icon, they'll make a really nice looking icon, they'll show it to their artist friends, they'll maybe show it to some focus groups, and they'll say, this looks great, and then they ship it. But it looks generic compared to other ones in the store. It's not a gaming example, but I like to use a to-do list as an example when I talk about this. So many to-do list apps out there have a checkbox for an icon.
So we're gonna publish Zombie Pumpkin Slayer to the store.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a really great icon.
Yeah, something like that, right? Yeah, but no, exactly, it needs to pop. So instead of my to-do list apps, let's use a zombie one. It's a great example. There's so many zombie games out there. If you have your zombie app as a picture of a zombie, and it might be a good looking zombie, but if it's not gonna stand out against all the other zombie apps, if it's not gonna look at a screen of not just your icon, but 50 other icons, and yours doesn't pop out at me, I'm not gonna click it. I'm not gonna be interested in it. It has to have that 10-foot test where I look at it from 10 feet away for half a second and know that is a good icon. That is interesting. That is cool.
Cool, great.
Next is your screenshots. I have up here on the slide an example of Temple Run, which is a really great game. Most of you guys out there probably have played it, but even if you haven't, you can look at this screenshot and you know exactly what's going on in the game. It has a guy running, there's coins in a straight line, I can see there's room to left and right where I can go and collect them. There's some enemies behind me chasing me, and it says swipe to turn, jump, and slide. Now, it's not giving me full instructions. It's not saying swipe up to jump and down the slide. I'm just getting the general idea. I can hold this in my hand as if this were a phone. I can see my thumb moving back and forth. I know how this game feels. I know how it plays.
Yeah, that's a lot of information in that one screenshot to mm-hmm. show you what that game's about and how you can have fun with it.
I mean, look at the water texture there, too. That's not a really good water texture, actually. That's kind of not the best, most pretty screenshot they could have picked. They could have very easily done this pre-rendered scene with the guy running into a temple, like Indiana Jones style, trying to grab his hat as he was sliding under a door, but they didn't. They used an actual screenshot from the game to show what the game's going to be like. Because if they had used that cooler screenshot, maybe some other people would have downloaded the game, but then they would have been not what they expected because they didn't know what to expect. Was it a third-person adventure game? You know, how does it play? And if it's not what they expect and it's not what they wanted, they'll uninstall it, or even worse, rate it badly. And that's gonna hurt you in the App Store rankings. It's gonna hurt you in the charts. It's gonna hurt your monetization. So it's better that the only people who actually download your game are people who are actually gonna be really engaged and want to play it. So you need to be as honest as possible. Even if honesty is not as pretty as you can make it, honest is more important.
Should I put a screenshot of my game menu?
No, really, I don't see why a menu is that important. Unless your game is about menus, you're some type of baseball management sim, you really don't need that menu. You need an example of what the gameplay is, and it's clear and concise in one image. Again, the Temple Run is a great example because it has all of the different elements of the game, and I know the nature of the game, I even implicitly know the goal of the game just in that one screenshot. And the more you can make it clear, and ideally in that first screenshot, the better chance you're going to get that the person who downloads it is someone who's going to be a player who will monetize well, who will stick the game, who will like it, or even just download it in the first place just because they know what it is. Last thing I want to talk about is the words, the description. Again, people just ignore this. They think, okay, this is a cool game. It's got 30 levels. It's awesome. Well, 30 levels doesn't mean anything to me. Does that mean I'm going to play it in 30 minutes? Does it mean it's going to take me 5 years to be able to master? You have to have a little more context here. You have to have a little more call to action is why your game stands out as unique, why it's better. But also it's got to have keywords, because the first people who are going to read it are not humans. We'll talk more about that in the next slide.
Should I take the full write-up description of my game from my game design document and just paste it into my description? Is that a good idea?
Wordy is never a good thing. If your game design document is the one-page game design document, I've been to a lot of talks at GDC lately where they pitch, instead of having these big 500-page Bibles, if you can pitch your game in one page or less, okay, maybe then you can copy some of that in. But again, you have to think about the keyword optimization. That brings me to my point, optimizing for search. How will they find you?
So like in Zombie Pumpkin Slayer, you just run around and you just slay pumpkins. Should I just put that in the description?
No, because there's so many games about zombies. Like, you want to talk about zombies and pumpkins and all those things, right? But you have to have keywords of what the game actually is. Because remember I said, the first people to read the game is not a human. It's going to be a robot. It's going to be a search engine. Just like your, you know, Google, your Bing, whatever search engine you're using, they read the web first, and then when I'm on the store and I'm like, I want a zombie game, I'm going to search zombies smashing, or I'm going to search pumpkin kids game, and I'm going to find different keywords, and based on the search algorithm, whatever that may happen to be, whatever the magic sauce they use, they're going to figure out which games go up in that chart. And the higher you are in that search result, the more natural downloads you're going to get. So this isn't something that you can guess. This isn't something that you can write and in a vacuum say, this is good keywords. You have to do your research. You have to actually go to the store, look at other zombie games, look at other pumpkin games, look at other games in the type of category that you're in, and figure out, well, does this game stand out? What keywords are they using? What is the game that doesn't stand out, rank 100? What words are they using? How frequently would they use a phrase like endless runner in a description? You know, do you use it once? Do you use it three times, emphasizing it? Well, when you submit to the store, you can submit certain keywords. Say you're doing some kind of trivia game. You can submit trivia or family, or you could submit family trivia. So if I'm searching for family trivia, the person who has those two words together in their key phrase, they're going to go up the charts higher. But if you search for family, they'll still appear if you only have the family trivia keyword, not quite as high. So you have to figure out what's important for your game. What keywords are most likely what people will be searching for to find it. Not the name of the game necessarily, but someone randomly searching on the store.
All right. So if I make a Flappy Bird clone, should I just put Flappy Bird in there, even though it's maybe something else Flappy or some other?
Well, most app stores are kind of against the idea of you using another game's name in the title. So I would advise against that, but I would look at Flappy Bird. I would look at your competitions and look at how they describe their game and try to describe your game similarly. Because if how people are finding Flappy Bird, if they don't necessarily remember the name Flappy Bird or just simply if they're searching for it, if you have similar keywords, you will appear in similar search results. Now, this isn't permission to copy and paste. I'm not saying to, you know, spam as many keywords as possible. Anyone have like a WordPress blog out there and it just gets comment spam after comment spam of, you know, 500 lines? A human is going to read this eventually. So you have to still be short, you have to still be punchy, you have to still have a call to action, but you have to also keep in mind these keywords and balance both of those when you're writing your description.
Great.
Next, let's talk about outmaneuvering your competition, which is really my fancy way of saying optimizing for your rank. Now, this part's kind of obvious, right? Like, everyone wants to be a number one app, but how exactly do you get to be number one? First, let's talk about how rank is determined. It could possibly, maybe, could be by some of these elements determined by downloads. Everyone knows that, right? Number of downloads is good, but that's not the only way it could be judged. Could be judged by the active installs. That's how many people currently have it on a device at any given moment in time. It could be judged by the velocity. That's how many downloads you're getting over a certain amount of time, you know, a week, a day, whatever that happens to be. It could be the ratings, both the number of ratings and the quality of those ratings. You know, I have a lot of different ratings, or I have a few very good ratings. And the usage. Doesn't help it if people have it on your phone and never use it, never open it, versus people who open the app every single day. That could go up the charts. Now, why did I say kinda, sorta, maybe? I don't actually know how the ranks are determined.
So the stores don't publish what their algorithm is for determining rank.
No,
I've never seen this before.
No, that would be
silly. You just have to try to guess, right?
In fact, they actually change it up often just to try and keep people on their toes. It's as if, imagine if Bean released a press release and said, this is how we determine what the number one website is. Every single website's just going to optimize for those specific things that they're searching for and just try and cheat the system to get number one. They try to make this a moving target so people can't cheat the system, so they can make the best game possible and have to optimize for all those different metrics in order to actually get up the charts. Because ideally, you shouldn't say, well, active installs is the only thing that matters. I can ignore every other metric as long as I have a good amount of active installs. That's not really good for the store. It's not good for the players. They have to change it up.
So help me out here, because my team, we're getting ready to publish Zombie Pumpkin Slayers to the store. Mm-hmm. And we want to maximize downloads. We want to have the most active installs. That's what you're telling me. So how do we do this? What are some good ways of doing this?
Well, there's always brute force. It has been, you know, tried and true method. You can have ads everywhere. You can buy ads. I'm sure you've seen some of the big mega games that spend literally millions of dollars on ads. Or for an example, in other medium, say you watch a new movie's coming out. You see a billboard of it. You see ads pre-roll before your Twitch videos. You see it on TV. And the theory of those ads is not that I see that billboard, I'm going to go watch that movie. It's I see that billboard, I see that pre-roll ad, I see that trailer before this other movie, and maybe that third or fourth time you see it, you think, well, maybe I might be interested in that, and then you actually go research that product, or you go want to see that movie, or you go download that app. And this has been proven by many studies, a lot of people who have marketing as their full-time degree that figure that out. And it definitely works, but it takes a lot of money to actually do that. It's not really practical to buy one billboard or one series of banner ads. So if you're only gonna sink, you know, just $1,000 into some click ads, probably not gonna see very many results from it. So you have to be able to think creatively on how to optimize for those metrics. Now, I could talk for days, years, months on all different ways to think creatively. And bottom line, it really comes down to your game. Your game might have some better way to market than other games. Some games will do one thing which doesn't work for another way. You really have to think on a per game basis how to get this up, get this more popular. Those examples we were listing earlier had very different ways. Minecraft marketed very different than Flappy Bird, very different than Angry Birds. There isn't one universal formula. But they did keep in mind how they were going to get known. They did have a strategy. It wasn't just, well, we'll hope the community will market for us virally. They had some method.
So let's say that, you know, we're going to release Zombie Pumpkin Slayer, but my friends are releasing another game. Can I cross-market with them?
Absolutely. Cross-promotion is a really good way to do it. I mean, if you don't know another indie developer, get in the chat and start introducing yourself to people, because there's so many developers out there who are in the same situation as you. And you guys are making games. It's a really great industry to be in because the competition kind of isn't really competition. You know, if I'm making an app, if I'm making a to-do list, I'm making some calendar, I'm only going to have one to-do list, one calendar on my phone. So there's some real competition for that space. But a game? Gamers play multiple games. If in your game you recommend your friend's game and vice versa, that player is just going to go to both. In my game, Blast Monkeys, when we were number one, we were cross-promoting with a game called Zoo Club. You know, we were a physics-based puzzle game, and they were this management zoo tycoon game. So very different audiences, very different keywords. People were finding us in the stores very different ways. But in Blast Monkeys, there was a zoo club world, entire levels themed to it. And in the corner of every level of that world was a button that said, oh, go here to play Zoo Club. And in Zoo Club, you could get Blast Monkeys as an animal for your zoo. Theme matched perfectly, right?
Yeah.
As we were number one, they went to number eight. Because it wasn't just that we gave them players, but they were giving us players, and we both shot up the charts because of it.
So it's mutually beneficial.
Absolutely.
Great.
And this isn't just, oh, this is something that because you're a small indie, you're going to do and you can't afford real advertisement. This is what Zynga does. This is Zynga's secret sauce. They may have a really big popular game. They make a new game and then they market that in their existing game for free and get the equivalent of $1 million ad buys for free because they're marketing to their existing player base in their previous game. Cross-promotion is a really good technique to build up momentum. And the more friends that you can get together to do it, the better. And I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, throw in a banner ad and you'll be good. Having that full integration is nice. Having some page that says, here's, you know, games I recommend is nice. But again, exactly how you implement that has to be on a per game basis. You can't have a, you know, Zoo Club world in every single game. It just worked really nicely for two friendly indie devs from the Bay Area who knew each other and had two animal themed games.
Great.
Probably the number one thing that I would recommend though is preventing uninstalls. Too many people think it's just about downloads, just getting as many people to look at the game as possible. But if they're looking at the game and then immediately uninstall it, that really hurts your active install metric. And that matters a lot more than people think. So you want people to keep it on the phone as long as possible. Because once they have it on the phone and then get rid of it, they're not going to keep playing it. And I know I say phone all the time because I talk mobile. That's where a lot of my experience come from. But this is the exact same stuff if you're doing a PC game, doing a Windows Store game, doing an Xbox game, same logic applies. Once you have the game and then remove it, you're very unlikely to install it again. So how do you prevent it from being uninstalled? Number one way I found, keep the file size small. For phones specifically, if my phone is out of memory, which happens all the time, I go to my apps list, I sort by size, delete the top one. If your app is 2 gigabytes, it's going to get deleted first. Well,
That can affect downloads too, right? Because of the constraints that carriers put on download size.
Absolutely. I believe it's a 50 megabyte limit now. It might have been 25 for a while. I think they upped it. But if it's under a certain amount of size, you won't be able to download on a 3G connection. They'll need Wi-Fi. And too many people think, well, if I'm past 50 megabytes, it doesn't matter. But there's a big difference between even a gig and 1.5 gigs. Because the bigger you are, the more likely you're going to get uninstalled. And if you're really big, even if your game's awesome, even if I play it every single day, I'm going to remove it and get 10 other games from the store. Because those 10 might suck, but as a consumer, the new is always going to be more interested than the known. So for Blast Monkeys, we pride ourselves that every update we did, and we were updating every 2 weeks, every update we did for the first 6 months, we were adding content and made the file size smaller. I believe at our peak lowest, it was a 4 megabyte game. Just to make it as tiny as possible. So when you look at that list of uninstalls, we were way at the bottom. Even speaking to the 3G download limit, you know, if you're at 50 megabytes, a lot of games are in that 45 to 50 megabyte range because they optimize just enough to be under there. So if you're at 30, you're already under a significant amount of your competition, and you're just that much less likely to be uninstalled because people sort by size and delete whatever's on top of that list first.
And I'll just say that, you know, this happens to me too. I'll go and I'll be mobile and I say, hey, this game looks really awesome. I want to download it. Oh, wait, I've got to wait for a Wi-Fi connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I forget about it. Sure, it downloads when I get home and my phone connects to Wi-Fi, but it could be days or weeks before I go back and revisit that game and notice that it's in my app list. So I just wanted to make that comment. That's something I've noticed before.
Yeah, absolutely. Next point I want to bring up is acquiring users intelligently. So whatever you do to get users, whether that's a traditional ad, whether that's these other cross-promotion ways, you have to figure out where those users are coming from and how long they're staying. You can't just get 1,000 users. An example I like to use is when you're doing ad buys, you can have analytics in your game to really know where that user came from and what their consumer lifetime value is. That is how much per average you earn per user. So you also figure out, you know, how much is cost per install. So if I spend $1,000 on an ad campaign, as an example, and I get 1,000 installs from that, you can say that it costs me $1 per install. Numbers are not going to be like that in the real world, but just using that as an example to make the math easier. Now, let's say that's some banner ads that I bought. Now, there's a video ad where I pay $2,000 and I get 1,000 installs. Well, now that's $2 per install. Well, if you're just looking at the cost per install metric, if you're just looking at the cheapest users possible, you would say that the banner ad users are better because you get $1 per, $2 per, cheaper is better, right? Not necessarily the case, because the 2,000 per, that was a 30-second video. That's a user who watched your game for 30 seconds, thought that game is interesting, and then they're going to install it. As per my point earlier with the screenshots, that user knows what kind of game they're getting into, knows that they're going to be interested in that game, and they're much more likely to stick with it. They're much more likely to keep playing. So if you calculate the consumer lifetime value of the banner ad user, that might be someone who just tapped a banner ad randomly. That might be just someone who saw a random screenshot, thought, interesting enough, and downloaded it, and they didn't really stick with the game. So you might be earning 50 cents consumer lifetime value per user. But the video ad person, ideally, you would earn $2.01 or some amount higher than what your ad campaign costs. And in that case, you look, well, do I lose 50 cents or do I gain 1 cent? That's when you're golden. If you can get to the part where you're gaining money, that's when you can do a big buy. That's what the big companies do. They optimize their metrics. They start small. They get players in the game. They keep tweaking it. They analyze it. And they find the advertisement method that works for them. And they optimize it just enough where they'll earn 1 cent. That means that however much money I put into it, I'm going to get that investment back. And then they can just keep putting money in and in and in and continually gain very small margins. But eventually, they'll get that viral effect, get more and more people. And then that's how big bulk advertisement works. Even if you're not going to end up doing that bulk, you should think about this. You should put analytics in your game. You should analyze where users are coming from, how long they're sticking with it. If I ask you a question, say, well, how many of your users are playing the game today? How many quit within the first 15 minutes? If you don't know those answers, how do you know anything about your game and how well it's doing? Number of downloads doesn't really tell you much.
Well, let me ask you this too. I know we're talking about advertising, but what if the app store that I'm on comes to me and says, hey, we want to do a promotional deal with your app. Can you reduce the cost of it for a week?
Yeah.
Is that worth doing?
Absolutely. In most cases, those kinds of deals are absolutely worth doing because if you can get that featured placement, you'll get so many eyeballs on your game. You'll more likely earn way more than what you would have gotten having it at full price. Another thing to note too is that if you're seeking out those promotions right now, but you haven't optimized your game for that stickiness, if people play your game for 15 minutes and then uninstall it because it's kind of boring, it doesn't matter how featured you are. It doesn't matter how many downloads you get. It doesn't matter if you get 100 million downloads. If they're all just users going to play for 15 minutes and uninstall, you're not going to make any money. You know, 200,000 users daily active, way better than 10 million downloads in a day.
Yeah.
So that also brings up the stacking marketing. The more that you can do at once, the more marketing efforts that you can do, the higher up the rank you're going to go. If you can get your ads aligned with a store featuring and something else, the more downloads at once, the higher up the ranks you'll get because you'll have that higher velocity, and maximizing that velocity will shoot you up the charts. So if you can get a store placement, try and line up as many ads as you can at that point. Cross promote with other people's games, post on different forums, do as much as you can at once because a big bump is much better than a small bump.
Great.
Next, I want to talk about beneficial behavior. Who's been in a game or an app or whatever it is, and they start it up and you get a pop-up that says, hey, would you like to rate us in the store? You've seen that, right,
yeah,
Jason?
Yeah.
Yep. Is that annoying to you?
It's extremely annoying.
Oh my God, it annoys me so much. I do not understand it.
They're asking me to rate the game before I've even played it, which is really, really annoying.
I've seen games that people put millions of dollars in doing this same mistake, and it's clearly a mistake. Because let me rephrase how this works. I start your app. The only thing you know about this user is that they want to play your game, and you're giving them the choice, A, ignore it and go play the game, or B, don't play the game. So say it's my favorite game in the world. I love this game. It is the best game ever. I start the game up. Hey, do you want to not play it right now? No, I want to play this game right now. It's the best game ever. Now let's say I accidentally tap your game. I'm starting my phone or, you know, I'm kind of bored. I'm messing around and I click it. Hey, do you want to rate it? Well, yeah, I didn't really want to play anyway. I guess I'll go rate it. 3 stars, yeah. 2 stars. You're just asking for bad ratings. It's not about that quantity. It's not about just getting people in the store because you're just going to get that bias of negative ratings. You only want to ask people who are really going to be into your game, who are really going to like it, who really want that 5-star review.
So an example of that, if if somebody's playing Zombie Pumpkin Slayer and they go through 50 levels of pumpkin slaying, and I can tell through the metrics that I'm collecting with my game that they really love the game, I'm gonna ask them to rate it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Even better is that as they're getting through, it's not just in between levels, like, hey, you wanna keep playing or rate, you do it at a nice pause moment. So for my game, Blast Monkeys, we were a free game, so we had in-app currency to be able to unlock the next level. If you got enough points, you were able to unlock it, or you gave us money, then you could do it. Another option was you could rate us in the store to get a small amount of coin. So somebody plays Blast Monkeys, they don't have fun, wasn't their game, whatever, they quit, they're fine, they leave. Someone who really likes the game, someone who wants the new content right away, and better yet, they didn't want to wait for it or keep playing, they saw the button to go rate us in the store, and suddenly we got 300,000 five-star ratings. Because all the people who loved our game, we then asked at that strategic moment to go rate us. So figure out where that strategic moment is in your game and only ask there to go rate. And this also goes with social. You can't just say in between levels, oh, hey, post this to Twitter, and the tweet message is, I'm playing this game. That's just saying, hey, could you please go advertise for free for me? Hey, could you please spam your friends for me? It's just asking for a handout, and people don't like doing that. A much better message is, I'm playing Pumpkin Slayer, Zombie Pumpkin Slayer, and I get a really awesome high score. I see on my charts that I beat you, Jason, so I send you a tweet and say, hey, I just beat Jason in the high score charts. I got this many points. Now you're getting a notification that says, hey, Tobias just beat you.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go back in and beat you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
It's a much better engagement. Yeah. You're interested in that message. I'm interested in sending it. It has value. It isn't an advertisement. It isn't value because I got 500 in-game coins for tweeting. It's intrinsic value that I wanted to tell Jason that I beat his high score, and thus I'm better than him, because that's how that works, right?
Yep. And then, in, you know, my competitive nature, I'm going to have to go back in and beat Tobias' score, because that is the nature of things.
Next, speaking of, you know, that negative messages, you want to have an outlet in your game for people to be able to rant at you. You want to have some email box that they can tap, pull up a message, and tell you something, anything. And I can tell you from experience, most of the messages you're going to get there is, this game sucks, or this is buggy, or I hate this. But that's great. And the reason why is that some number of those people who play your game and they don't like it for whatever reason, they're going to go to the App Store and they're going to rate it 1 star. But if you give them that outlet to say, hey, this sucks, they get it out of their system, they're fine, they send that message to you, and then they quit and they don't go and rate it. Even better, you can be tricky about it. You could have it automatically include in that email message what device they're using, what version of the app they're using, maybe some last error messages, you want to be really fancy. Then you can look at that list and go, oh, I see where there's a problem. So say you get, you know, a bunch of emails like, hey, this device isn't working. Well, wait, why is that? You can go get that device. Oh, wait, there's some screen aspect ratio problem, fix the bug, push out an update. Even better, if you give an optional return email address field, you can contact them and say, hey, thank you so much for pointing out this problem. I think we fixed it. If you want, you can go try it out, but thank you so much for your help. Now, I guarantee you, if you reply to a message, no matter how hateful it is, 99% of the time, they're going to turn around completely. You're going to say, oh, thank you. I love this. It's awesome. You're cool. They're going to tell all their friends, oh, man, I knew this developer for this game. We talked. We're buddies because I helped them out.
A little bit of customer service goes a long way.
A huge way. Yeah. Having that communication with your audience is a big deal, and you want to make it as direct as possible. And so, again, speaking of communication, let's get to the last point in App Store optimization. Be remarkable, literally. I mean, you want to literally have your game something that people want to talk about. You make it as easy as possible for people. You know, first step for that, make a press kit, make a website. You might be looking at this as like, oh, okay, I'll put a link to the App Store. And yeah, your App Store presence is needed, but you need something for people to talk about. Say I'm a reviewer for a magazine or some website, and I want to write about your game. If I don't have anywhere to link to, I'm less likely to want to write about you because it just seems weird to talk about this amorphous game project. Or even worse, say I want to write about you and I want to use a screenshot, I'm not gonna open up your app, take a screenshot, and manually upload it to my computer. That's work. If you make it easy for me, if you give me a list of press-worthy screenshots, you give me a write-up, a description about the game and how it works, you give me the website to link to, make it as easy as possible for people to talk about you. Even if your game isn't popular yet, this isn't something you need once you get popular. This is something you need in order to get popular, in order to have people write about it.
Now, let's say I do this. I go through the trouble of sending my game for a playtest to a journalist, and they give me a horrible review. Should I just give up? Should I quit?
No, absolutely not. Games you have to iterate on. You have to continually build that up. You have to build a community around that game. Bad feedback is positive, is good. Look at Minecraft as an example. That game started in pre-alpha, completely buggy. You'll look at all the early access games that are going on right now. Those games are popular not because they're perfect, not because they're amazing, but they're building up a community around it. Let it be okay that there's problems in your game and have that communication. Tell your audience, hey, this is what I'm working on. What should I work on next? This is part of having a website, having a Twitter feed. It isn't just for you to spam out one-way message and not get anything back. Start that two-way dialogue. Even if it's like 10, 100 people, those are not going to be your hardcore fans and grow over time. This is an exponential growth. You can't just start off with hundreds of thousands of fans. You have to start with tens of fans in order to build up slowly and build that story and have that message. And playtesting in public is such a great thing right now. Everyone's doing it. You can Twitch stream your game development live. You can talk with people, and consumers love it. They want to know how the sausage is made. They want to know how games are being made, and they want to hear it. So tell them your story. It's interesting. You're a small independent developer. You have a great story right off the bat, no matter what you're doing or what stage of development you are. You have to be a lightning rod for success. A friend of mine told me that once. It's a really great message, because it isn't just about lightning's going to strike me and then I'm going to be successful. I'm going to be really lucky and go up to the top. You have to make yourself ready for that success, ready for those press releases, ready for both success and failure. Too many devs out there don't prepare for failure, because let's be honest, most apps fail. And so they prepare, well, okay, I'm not going to do this full time. I'm not going to, you know, rely on this as my main source of income. But they also don't prepare for success either. They don't set up a website. They don't do a press kit. They don't do any marketing. They just kind of let it sit there because they're thinking, oh, well, it's never going to be popular. Well, if you think that, well, it will never be popular. You have to actually do the work as if it is popular, as if you're ready for it to be big at any moment, ahead of time, and then ride that wave once you start getting it. One article could be that spark that starts the fire, that starts you going. But if you don't have any Tinder sent out, you know, it's just going to be one article, one and done.
Okay, so then Zombie Pumpkin Slayer is the best game ever made ever in the history of video games, and I'm just going to approach it that way.
Well, you can't just think like a developer. You can develop the best game in history. And if you don't do anything with it, no one's going to find it. If you're an indie, you have to think like a publisher. You have to actually market your game. You have to actually ship your game. You have to actually iterate in public on what's going on. You have to do what a publisher would traditionally do. We're talking about indies as not having publishers, but that doesn't mean you can skip out the publisher role. So you can't just develop the best thing ever. Because if I have the best game and no one sees it, no one knows about it, what's that going to mean? And that also brings up post-release content. I've talked to so many reviewers that will look at a game, and if it hasn't been updated in the last 3 months, they won't write about it, no matter how awesome it is. And they have told me, literally, well, if they don't care about their game, why should I? If you're not updating your game constantly, it shows that you don't care about it. Just as an example, go look at your favorite apps on the App Store. Go ahead right now. You can do it. You're going to see that they were updated probably in the last 6 months, more likely in the last 3 months, even if they've been out for years. Just continue a little updates, continue a little pushes, just showing that, hey, we still care about this game. We still care about this community. We're still adding new content. You have to think of your apps in this post-release cycle, constantly adding new things. And that brings me to my last big point. Apps are a service. So many people think of apps as a product. And you have to think of apps as a service industry. That means it's something that you continually do. It's something you continually update. A product is something you make and ship. Maybe you make 1.1 and you ship that. This is what you're used to. If you've been working at a regular job, most of the time you're in a product industry. The AAA games industry is a product industry. Apps are a service industry. You have to think about continually updating it. This applies to freemium games, but also to premium games too. You have to constantly add new content. Blast Monkey is my game, my company. We are updating it every 2 weeks. We had something new in the game, and that was key to our success, to constantly build up that community, build up more games. And it certainly wasn't the first game we made. A great example is Angry Birds. Everyone knows Angry Birds was the 52nd game made by Rovio. That's 51 games of relative obscurity, of barely getting by money, of thinking they're gonna have to close down the studio in layoffs. 51 games, 52nd is the most popular game of all time ever. You can't give up early. You can't just release a game, see that it doesn't go anywhere in 3 months and go, well, no one automatically downloaded it and didn't magically become popular, so it must not have been that good. Every game takes iteration. You know how many downloads, you know how high in the rank Angry Birds got in the first 3 months?
Top 100?
No, pretty terrible, actually. I think they got about 10,000 downloads, which isn't horrible, actually. This is a pretty good amount of downloads. Yeah. If you think about how it was a studio working this game for a year, though, they were hemorrhaging money really badly. A lot of people I talked to, if I showed them the numbers of what Angry Birds was at 3 months in, they would have said, well, clearly this game's a flop, cut it loose and try something else. But they didn't do that. They invested more advertising dollars in it. They kept pushing it. They put new content out there. And then it started getting popular. Blast Monkeys, about 3 months in, not very popular at all. I mean, I would even admit we've had like 1,000 active users in about 3 months in. 4 or 5 months in, we were the number one Android app. Big differences can happen overnight. And it's not because 3 months in we started doing something differently. It's that exponential growth. Those tens of fans started turning into hundreds of fans, started turning into thousands of fans, and eventually turned into millions of fans. A great example is Antichamber. If you can look at the GDC vault, there's a really good talk on Antichamber. I think he called it Overnight Success, 7 years in the making. He's working on the game for 7 years before he finally got it out there. And then he made, like, I think $5 million in the first week or something crazy like that. Yeah. Everything is a skill. This is the last point I want to leave you with. Everything you do is a skill. You know development's a skill. You know when you start coding, you're going to have to iterate on it. You're going to have to jump into it. You're doing a lesson like this to start doing something. You know, if I talk to an artist and I say, okay, hey, you're an artist, you learned art, so did you do art by analyzing what's in art galleries, what are the top artists, who's, you know, hot, you know, being talked about? You made an art design document where you wrote up what your art piece is going to be like. You bought this amazing canvas and these super expensive paints in a studio, and you planned out exactly what you're going to draw, and then you finally took the paint and went to the canvas and made a masterpiece and were super successful. Sounds really silly, right? Sounds kind of stupid. No artist is going to think that's the way you do it. Why do app developers think that's how it works? Why do app developers think they can look at the store, figure out what the number one apps are, say, okay, this is what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna write an awesome design document, they're gonna jump into their engine for the first time, making their first game, spend a year working on it, release it, and expect that it's going to be the best game ever? You know, truthfully, the second thing you make, it's gonna be better than the first thing. Your first thing's gonna suck. The second thing's gonna suck compared to the third thing. The fourth thing's gonna suck compared to the fifth thing.
So, you know, we're getting ready to release Zombie Pumpkin Slayer to the stores, and we're thinking about doing in-app purchases, mm-hmm. but we don't really know what's gonna work yet for maximizing purchase conversions. Do we just iterate on that?
Yeah, get it out there.
Do we try some first, and then we start kind of analyzing our analytics and saying, hey, what are people purchasing? What are they not purchasing?
Yeah, that's exactly the way you do it. You know, you could get a focus group of 1,000 people in a room, get a giant stadium, buy pizza, test everyone out, have them write awesome feedback, or you could just put it out there. let it get 1,000 downloads in a store and monitor those people's, what they're doing implicitly. Do it automatically in the background, just as they're playing and using the app. Even if they don't like the experience, you'll collect that data that they didn't like it or that they quit, and that will help you determine, oh, hey, when they get to level 3, everyone quits. Why is that? Well, it's because they died 5 times while getting on. Oh, we need to make it easier, or we need to add more health packs, or we need to figure out some other way to balance it. The sooner you get out, the quicker you can do that iteration.
So if I'm serious about making money, then I need to have analytics embedded in my game.
Absolutely.
So something like Flurry, or that's the major one.
There are a lot of different solutions out there. You can even make your own in Azure fairly easily.
Right.
You can just throw up a PHP page, do a different call to it, throw a different tag. It can be as simple as that. It doesn't really need to be all that fancy. You just need to track the metrics you care about. You know, hey, when are people dying? When are they starting the next level? How long are they playing before they quit? That kind of stuff. And you just need to start doodling. You just need to start getting your game out there and getting another game out there and start developing over and over and over again. And the more you develop, the better you're going to be as a developer, just with every skill you're going to do. It applies with marketing too. The first time you try marketing a game, not going to be as good as the second time. You just have to keep marketing over and over. You keep experimenting over and over and finding what works. And it's okay to do something that doesn't work. You can just try again and do something else later. Or even take the same thing and iterate on it. And again, these games took years to make, years of iteration, years of being out there before they were successful. Wasn't Flappy Bird on the stores for like 8 or 9 months before it hit number one?
Yeah, it seems right.
Yeah, it was on for a while before it reached the top. So it is absolutely like never too early, I think, to get out there and build that community, build your audience, and just start practicing.
Yeah, talking about preparing for success, Flappy Bird was an overnight hit, and I think it kind of overwhelmed the developer a little bit, and he had to pull the game from the store because he wasn't set up to handle that.
So yeah, it wasn't quite ready for his success necessarily.
Right.
There's also an argument that he pulled back, and then everyone wanted to talk about it. Everyone wanted to talk about the next thing, and then he comes out with this next game, and it hits up in the media everywhere, right? So it was kind of a strategic decision there. It's like, hey, I don't need to deal with this right now. I want to focus on what's important to me. He wasn't just worried about, I'm getting this many downloads now. He was worried about long-term, how is he going to set up his indie development in the future? And that applies to all developers. It's not just about that short-term, how do I get downloads right now? How do I get known right now? The first things first is make your game great. Once you have a great game, once you have a perfect game, then you can start pushing it. Then you can start marketing it. You don't need a million users right now when you're starting out. You need a few users who are going to give you really good feedback, who are going to iterate on it, who are going to polish it. If you have a game that monetizes really, really well with only 1,000 players, it's easy to scale that up to 1 million players because you're monetizing well. It's doing that math, like I said earlier, where you can start ramping up the advertisement. But if you're not monetizing well, 1 million, 10 million, 1,000, it doesn't make a difference. Well, I hope that was you learned something about marketing and monetization. If you have any questions about that, I love getting questions. You can tweet me at Tobias Marks or go to my blog, tobiasmarks.com, where I have a bunch of articles and information. Jason as well, you're Jason G. Fox on Twitter.
At Jason G. Fox.
So, ask us questions. It was a really hard topic to kind of condense in 50 minutes. There's so many different aspects to touch on. I know I went kind of fast, but hopefully you guys learned something and found it interesting. We're going to take a 15-minute break and stick tuned for module number 9. Thank you very much.
Thank you.